بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We were discussing the ma'una and the importance of discussing the ma'una lies in the fact that we take away from the annual gains that which qualifies as ma'une. And we had discussed the different types of ma'une, their different classifications, and whatever these comprise, and all the examples that we went through, you can deduct it from the annual gains. And in any given year, whatever the result is, one can then divide by five, and then that is one's duty to pay, and that qualifies as the khums. But we're continuing with the ma'una discussion today also. And we had reached slide number 21. And here, just as a summary, we're going to go through three different principles that we've covered, just revising them. The first condition of the ma'una is that it must be related to the expenses of this world and the hereafter in a manner that is on a par with one's status. Well, this world, the worldly livelihood expenses, the expenses that you need to acquire profit, and we discussed the examples type A and type B, ma'una. Expenses of the hereafter, the good deeds that you pay for, the charities, going to Hajj, and other examples. All these qualify as expenses for one's hereafter. And it has to be on a par with one's status. We explained that it shouldn't qualify as extravagance, wasting, and other examples, like mindless spending or anything that qualifies as a sin. All these are outside the jurisdiction of the ma'una. The second condition was that it has to be spent in actuality. The ma'una has to be actually spent in real terms. And it can't just be a potential ma'una. For example, if someone gifts you a ma'una, you can't then deduct that from your annual gains just because you said, well, this gift was given to me, this ma'una was given to me, I can now take it away from the annual gains. No. That ma'una which was gifted to you is your, you know, was gifted to you. If it wasn't gifted to you, then you would have to take it from your annual gains. That would be okay. But now it's gifted to you. Just because it's gifted, that sum which is gifted, you can't just take away from your annual gains. Or an example of the deceased I've given here. When someone passes away, once they pass away, whatever the ma'una was until they passed away in that given year that they passed away, one can deduct from their annual gains of the deceased, and they would have to give the khums. Here the inheritors would have to commit themselves to this duty. But now, can the inheritor say, were the deceased to live to the end of his or her khums year, they would have spent this much ma'une, let's deduct that from the annual gains? The answer is no. That's just a potential estimation. An estimation which never actualizes in actuality. And so that, you can't deduct that. The ma'une has to be spent, actually spent. Okay, and another example we gave was those who save on petrol and then they want to deduct that much which they have become economical with, they want to deduct that. I don't want to go through all the examples again. Okay, and then finally the ma'una has to be deducted, the ma'una which is deducted from one's annual gains must be the ma'une of that particular year and not for example, succeeding years. For example, if you don't need a fridge this year, this khums year, you don't need a fridge. You don't need to buy a ticket to travel this year because you want to travel next year, or you need the fridge next year. If you purchase the fridge or the ticket from the annual gains of this year, that would be, it's permissible. But here, you can't deduct it from the annual gains. Only that ma'une can be deducted from the annual gains, which is the ma'une, which means the expenses that you need for that year. And so if the fridge is required for the succeeding year, but you purchase it from this year, you can't deduct that purchase from the annual gains. And if you do, it's permissible if you do, but a fifth of it has to be given as khums. And the same applies for the plane ticket, for example. Although there are now secondary discussions that may arise that if I don't purchase it now for next year, I won't be able to purchase it next year. And this will cause considerable burden for me. Here, there are exceptions. But right now, we're discussing the primary principles of ma'une. Now, sometimes it may be necessary to accumulate one's annual gains over the years, store them, keep them, save them. And this may be necessary in relation to certain forms of ma'une. For example, when you want to buy a house, you can't buy a house with the annual gains of one particular year. You need to accumulate. This discussion, inshallah, we shall cover in the next session. It's a very important discussion, has many different marginal points which need exploring. Okay. Now let's go to slide number 22. A number of miscellaneous points here. One is only allowed to spend on a par with one's status and thus only receive that much which is on a par with one's status from the Islamic treasury. Now, as a way of khums or a charity or other forms, here, that you can only accept charity that much which is on a par with your status. If you, for example, only need X pounds per month or X pounds per year to fulfill your needs that your status requires of you, you can't receive more than that. This has a lot of complications because the Islamic treasury, it's the people's money. And therefore, this is going to be very problematic. It's an example of usurpation. So receiving more is a sin, and it's an example of usurping. Also note that one can't artificially create, you know, in one's mind, a high status for oneself. And just be, you know, you artificially create a theoretical high status for yourself, and then therefore you allow yourself to be a recipient of more charity or of more khums or of more other forms of money. No, you're not allowed. This would not be on a par with your status. Now, this is a threat. Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli once said that this is a threat, especially for seminary students, that as they are studying in the seminaries, they should become more and more submissive to Allah, more and more humble before Allah. But God forbid, sometimes they may raise their status more, making them become more of a recipient in relation to certain charities. One has to be careful here. And so this receiving more that surplus would not be an example of ma'oneh. That would be usurping. That's very problematic. You've exited the boundaries now of the ma'oneh. One has to be careful here. It doesn't matter. Whatever your economic status is, you have to be careful. Another miscellaneous point is, we said that you can deduct all your ma'oneh from the annual gains. And that's okay. And remember the hadith, al-khumsu ba'da al-ma'oneh. So, even if one had stored one's belongings which are non-khums leviable, like inheritance. Let's say you inherited some money and you had placed it in a savings account or stored it somewhere and you haven't touched it. There's no khums on that inheritance. Or, for example, something was khums leviable but you've paid the khums already and now you've stored it somewhere. Either type. So you have a lot of money of which were either non-khums leviable or they were khums leviable but you've paid off their khums. Now, this year you have ma'oneh to spend. You can spend it from the inherited money or the already khumsated money, or you can deduct it from your annual gains. Both are okay. So the option is there. Now, here there's no obligation to spend half of your ma'oneh from your annual gains and half from the stored khumsated money or the stored non-khums leviable money. There's no need to do 50-50, you know, spending. You have the choice. You can do either way. Naturally, if you spend from the inherited money for your ma'oneh in a given year, your annual gains would be more in total, and therefore you're paying more khums. But you're allowed, and there's no problem, by spending your ma'oneh from your annual gains and leaving your inherited money as it is. And therefore, as a result, you would be spending less khums because you're deducting more from the annual gains. But the point is, either is okay, and you have that choice. Another miscellaneous point on this slide, number 22, is that sometimes someone may commit an intentional crime or felony. And that crime or felony, a felony like, you know, speeding, for example, and you're fined. Or you may receive you have to pay a penalty for a crime that you've committed, injured someone, so on and so forth. Now, this penalty or fine that you have to pay, this would be deemed as your ma'oneh, because it's to do with your livelihood. If you're not going to pay that penalty or the fine, you may be taken to prison. You have to protect yourself. It's a responsibility and to secure yourself. And expenses in this line of payment and, you know, the penalties and the fines, such expenses are also deemed as your ma'oneh. Because at the end of the day, it qualifies as a livelihood expense. Here, the nature of the livelihood is to protect oneself from going to prison, for example. That much is okay. But there's a very delicate point. Some people may be very careless, and they become accustomed to this negligence and carelessness, and they commit a lot of felonies. And they're not paying heed to the severity of what they're doing. They're taking it very lightly. And so, very carelessly, they keep on committing different felonies. And therefore, more and more fines have to be paid. Now here, assuming one is careless and they're becoming accustomed to such shortcomings, here they exit the boundaries of the ma'oneh. And that those extra penalties you're paying for, if you deduct it from your annual gains, a fifth of it you would have to then pay as chums, because they are not part of your ma'one. That carelessness will not be compensated from your annual gains. The chums would have to be given. So that's another delicate point that needs to be understood. Finally, there's one discussion which is very delicate also, and that is in relation to affairs pertaining to the hereafter, such as giving charities, for example, or contributing to other good causes in general. A question arises as to whether or not this too must be on a par with one's status. So when you're giving charity, the amount that you give in charity, must it be on a par with your status? Or can you just keep on giving charity, which is beyond your status, but it's a very good deed? You're not, and assuming you're not harming your family members by giving a lot of charity, but the amount of charity you've given is beyond your status quo. Is one allowed to do that or not? If one is allowed, one deducts it from one's annual gains, and one is allowed, okay, so be it. You'll pay less chums at the end of the year. If you're not allowed, that surplus, let's say your status quo was to give £100 per month in charity, but you gave £200 a month, so it would be £1,200 beyond your status. You gave that £1,200, a fifth of it has to be given as chums, because you've deducted from your annual gains when it wasn't strictly part of your annual gains. It wasn't part of your ma'oneh. So the question arises as to whether the charity that you give for the hereafter, for your own hereafter, does it have to be on a par with your status? Or no, it doesn't have to be on a par. It's an important question. Here, almost all, but let's say most definitely, most of the Maroji, including Ayatollah Sistani, including Ayatollah Khomeini, say yes, these charities that you give, or other deeds and good deeds that you pay for, it has to be on a par with your status. And therefore, any extra amount beyond your status, the khums will be levied upon that. So let's say you spend, because you're spending from your annual gains in general, and now you've gone over the top, that much which is a surplus, the khums would have to be levied. It would have to be calculated and then levied. Ayatollah Jawadi Amali, it's a very minority position. And maybe one or two others, they say no. You can pay more than your status. And you can deduct it from your annual gains, and there'll be no khums levied on that surplus. And then he says that, isn't this like saying to the person, if you were to tell them you can only spend charity on a par with your status, isn't this like saying to that individual that you are limited in raising your heavenly status? Because you're telling them you can only spend on a par with your status. And he said, Ayatollah Jawadi said that, isn't this like you telling them it's on a par with, you're limiting your heavenly status. He says, no, you shouldn't limit them. And if they want to spend as much as they want, let them spend it. Yes, they shouldn't spend in a way that will affect their obligatory duties to their families, for example. But if that scenario is secured, there's no problem with spending as much as you want, according to Ayatollah Jawadi Amiri. But the majority say no, it has to be on a par with your status. Now, this argument that Ayatollah Jawadi has mentioned, it's a theological point, saying that, isn't it like limiting, telling the person you're limited in raising your heavenly status? First of all, one can reply that one's heavenly status isn't a function of one's quantitative payment of charities. Rather, it's ikhlas, it's the sincerity of doing things for Allah's sake, solely for Allah's sake, which is a function of spirituality. And that's important for raising one's heavenly status, not the quantitative amount you want to give. Someone may give £1 in charity. Let's say person A gives £1 in charity, person B gives £100 in charity. But that £1 in charity, the ikhlas may be so much ahead and deeper and more sincere than the person who gives £100. So one's heavenly status isn't a quantitative measure. That's one point which one can reply. Another point is this: whose money is this that you're spending? Remember, it's a fifth of it is the share of the 12th Imam. Are you allowed, without the consent of the 12th Imam, to just spend nilly-willy? Yes, it's not, maybe nilly-willy was the wrong expression. No, you're giving it for charity. But this giving for charity, can you turn a blind eye on the share of the Imam? When the fiqhi principles dictate that it has to be on a par with your status quo, and anything which is a surplus, a khums of it has to be levied, well, here too, the same applies. You can't give charity beyond your status and then turn a blind eye to the share of the Imam. That would be like usurping again. You need the Imam's consent. The consent of the Imam is on a par with the Sharia. The Sharia says you can only, according to the majority, say you can only spend on a par with your status. With the ma'uneh, anything beyond your status would be either, it would qualify either as israf, tabdhir, it may be a sin, it may be mindless spending. Remember those categories we went over in the last session? And so the khums will be levied according to the majority. The Imam's share can't be just wasted here, can't be compromised with. You need permission for that. So precaution also dictates that one doesn't go beyond in spending charity for charity, doesn't go beyond one's status. Okay. Slide number 23. The ruling of khums pertaining to one's ma'oneh after the passing of a year or on reaching one's khums date. Okay. So, remember, we in the last session, we described a number of classifications of ma'oneh. One of the reason we gave those classifications was now we want to go through the rulings pertaining to those classifications. So, remember the soft goods, slide number 23. Soft goods are things, the goods that are consumed, like food, for example, or masks. One using masks once, then you get rid of the masks, or the disposable gloves, for example. The soft goods are the non-durable goods. Let's say now a year has passed, or you've reached your khums date, And there's a number of soft goods that remain. Here one must give a fifth of those goods that remain at one's chums state. They must give it as a chums. So for example, you have a sack of rice which remains at the end of the year, a fifth of it has to be given. You have a container of salt, a pack of cornflakes, bottle of perfume. These are all non-durable soft goods, and they remain at the end of the year. On remaining at the end of the year, now the chums will be levied upon it. And here, these goods which remain, a fifth of it has to be given as chums to the religious authority. So if it's 10 kilograms of rice, 2 kilograms has to be given to the religious authority, and so on and so forth. Now the wisdom of this, the rationale of this, is because the surplus of rice, for example, is in reality the annual gains of that year, which had become converted to goods, but now you haven't spent them. You still have some rice remaining. That rice which remains, in reality, was your annual gains. You spent the money for the rice from your annual gains, okay? And now you have rice. At the end of the year, some of that rice remains, and that means some of your annual gains, therefore, remains. So that's linked. You have to append those non-durable goods that remain. You have to join them back to your annual gains. They are part of your annual gains. And it's the annual gains upon which the chums is levied. With which money did you purchase, let's say, the 10 kilograms of rice? It was with your annual gains. Now it's not been, if it was all spent, so be it. But you haven't consumed it all. So that amount that you haven't consumed, it has to be calculated as your annual gain. And then the chums would have to be given. So here, if it's 10 kilograms of rice, 2 kilograms has to be given to the religious authority because of it being, it qualifies as annual gains. Okay. Now you go to the office of your marajah, your religious authority, and let's say they look at the rice and say, look, we can't accept this rice or this salt, this pack of salt or cornflakes or bottle of perfume. We can't, it's difficult for us to take it from you. Here, you have to give a fifth of the price of that good. What, you have to estimate its price. For example, its market value. And then a fifth of it, you give it to the marajah's office. So by way of example, if it's a sack of rice, for raw rice, for example, then the market price would count as the criterion here, because the recipients of the chums, the ahlul chums, the needy sayyids, for them, you have to give them a money which they, when they want to go and purchase the rice, they would have to go to the marketplace and purchase it. So the money you estimate for your remaining rice at the end of the year has to be of market value. That's the money you give to the religious authority. Because when the needy sayyids receive that money, they are encountering what the market price is. So if the religious authority doesn't accept your non-durable goods, you make an estimate what the market value is, and then a fifth of it you have to give to the religious authority. Now, let's say if it's a half-used bottle of perfume, what's one's duty there? Here the market value of the perfume may or may not qualify here, because with a half used bottle of perfume, we don't know whether that is of any value or of the market price, the retail price, if it's of the same value, because it's been used. But for you, for the duty bound, it is of value. For you, it qualifies as marlon, as something of value. And remember, khums is levied on marlon. It has to be something of value. For you, there is some value in it. Some goods, when you use them, the value perishes. For those goods, okay. For you, it won't qualify as marlon, and you can't. It won't qualify as marlon, as something of value, as a belonging, even according to the common layperson. Those things, you don't have to calculate. But half a bottle of used perfume, that used perfume is still of value for you. Sometimes it may not be. This is, you have to ascertain the application here. But even if it's a half-used bottle of perfume and it qualifies as a belonging, precaution dictates here that you estimate what a fifth of the price would be and then give it to the religious authority. Sometimes something may not have a market value, but may have a jumble sale or car boot sale value. That's okay, you calculate it. And sometimes it being used once, it may be valueless, and therefore there's no need to calculate it. So look how you have to handle this situation. It's not a very easy equation that just because you've used the bottle of perfume, then that's it. It's a bit more finer than that. Okay, now let's say if one's religious authority, when you take these non-durable soft goods to the religious authority, if they say to you, go and sell it and bring me the money. Here, the criterion is that price, the market or elsewhere, will pay for buying it from you, according to what the norm is. And after selling it, the duty bound gives a fifth of the money to the religious authority. So either you go and sell it and give a fifth to the religious authority, or you estimate a fifth. You want to keep it for yourself, for example. You want to keep the goods for yourself. You get an estimate of the value, and then you give a fifth of it to the religious authority. Now, sometimes a third scenario may arise, that you can say, for example, you can ask the religious authority that, can you sell it to me? This third scenario, just is a different technique here, that you tell the religious authority when you give him the 10 kilograms of rice, 2 kilograms has to be given. He won't accept the 2 kilograms of rice. If he tells you to sell it, you go and sell it and then give him a fifth. Or you get an estimate and then you give him a fifth. Or you can tell him you want to keep that 2 kilograms. You tell him, can you sell me that 1/5 of this rice? And the criterion for the religious authorities selling it to you, that would also be the market price. Why? Because the Ahlul Khums will encounter this price when desiring to purchase it for themselves. Those who are needy, this is the price they'll be affected with. And so depending on how the situation arises, at the end of the day, the criterion is the Ahlul Khums, those who are worthy recipients, legitimate recipients of the Khums, their interests shouldn't be compromised. That is important in such scenarios. If you act in a way whereby their interests are compromised, you're doing something wrong. That shouldn't be done. Okay. Inshallah, in the next session, we'll discuss the other class of belongings, and they were the durable goods. What is the criterion there? So that would be, we'll start with slide 24, inshallah, in the next session. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِهِ الطَّاهِرِينَ